Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah, a registered associate nutritionist and your favourite crazy bean. Full of Beans is on a mission to reduce eating disorder stigma and increase eating disorder awareness. Together, we will establish inspiring conversations with a range of individuals, including those with personal experience and their loved ones, as well as clinicians, researchers, and charities who are all working to increase the understanding of eating disorders. Using my personal battle with atypical anorexia and body dysmorphia, as well as my master's in eating disorders and clinical nutrition, we will together explore the experiences of like-minded individuals who are equally as passionate about sharing their stories to increase the understanding of eating disorders. Please note that this podcast discusses sensitive topics and should not be seen as a replacement for evidence-based therapy or treatment. Today I'm joined by Katie McKenzie. Katie is a fourth year med student. Katie has her own experience of an eating disorder, and today she is here to talk to me about, which I think is perfectly timed, her experience of university and her eating disorder, and also how we can raise awareness in medicine about eating disorders. Hello, Katie.
Hi, nice to have you. No, not nice. Nice to speak to you today. Sorry.
Nice to have me in your room. Yeah, that makes sense. No, it's absolutely lovely to have you. And just before we started, I just wanted to say thank you for all your support, because you have been sharing so much of the podcast on social media and giving such nice feedback. So it really is lovely to be talking to you today. I wanted to start by kind of you explaining your experience of having an eating disorder. I think you mentioned that kind of developed for you at uni. So I wondered if you could kind of lay the foundations for us.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, as you mentioned, it was something that only really developed whilst I was at university. So kind of before I went, I always kind of considered myself having a pretty normal relationship with food and sort of not really struggling with my mental health either. So I think when I kind of went and got unwell, it was a bit of a shock to the system, really. So it kind of started like a few months after I was there. So I think obviously when you first go to uni, it's really busy. So you've got like freshers week, you're meeting loads of people. So that was like completely fine. But I think kind of thrown into kind of a new course, it was quite high pressured because sort of everyone in medicine is kind of on the same level academically, but like previously to that, in like secondary school and college, I'd sort of had grades as something about me, I suppose. So I think that was kind of something that felt a bit off. And then I suppose I just kind of, I think it was sort of when I went home for Christmas, I hadn't really realised I'd kind of developed some like rules around food and stuff. But it was just certain things that I would have normally been fine eating in certain situations. I just kind of didn't feel like I could, or didn't feel like I wanted to. But kind of still at that point, it wasn't really much of a problem. But then kind of when I went back after Christmas, that was still kind of continuing. And now I was just constantly thinking about food. So like just worried about what I was eating, when I was eating, sort of worried about it afterwards as well. And it kind of affected how much I could concentrate on the course as well. So it kind of made it difficult to do like one or the other, really. But at the time I was just more focused on like the food, and sort of the eating disorder voice was just stronger than kind of my voice at that time. I'd sort of like heard about eating disorders before as well, and I remember kind of Googling what I was kind of thinking and what was going on, but then reading it and just thinking that that's not me, and kind of thinking that I'm not unwell enough for that yet. And that's kind of what I said when I went home once. I spoke to my parents and they kind of said something obviously is wrong because you're just thinking about food all the time. And I did say that I'm just not unwell enough, there's people who are worse than me. And I think that's kind of a sign of the illness in itself. But that was what kind of pushed them to push me to go to the GP, really. And then they diagnosed me with, it was like anorexia at the time, but I also struggled with bulimia as well, sort of together. So yeah, that was in 2017. So since then, I stayed at uni for a bit, but I couldn't really balance the two. I tried to, but it was kind of like a double life, really. It didn't really work out. And then I like took the year out, just focused on recovery that whole year, and then started back at uni in 2018 from the beginning. And since then, I've luckily been pretty okay.
Well, I think your story sounds quite similar to mine. It's quite not nice to hear, but refreshing to talk to you, kind of having a similar thing. And I guess I've got so many questions from what you've asked, but I'll take it slow, rather than me getting really excited and asking you all at once. And I don't want to make an assumption here, but did you almost feel like you'd gone from kind of being the big fish in a small pond at school to kind of a small fish in a big pond? And did you feel like you kind of needed something else to be good at because you weren't, you said that before you had the grades and that was kind of your thing. Did it feel like you needed something else to maybe fill that gap?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it felt like. And I think I kind of turned kind of the perfectionism that I'd had for grades to food, because grades are sort of a given, and I think food was just something that was easier, like achievable, and sort of that was my thing that I could do. So yeah, definitely, I think I definitely relate the kind of academic personality thing to the eating disorder, really.
Yeah, and I think it's quite common. I've spoken to people before when they've said that they've had really good grades. It's sort of that characteristic, isn't it, of being a perfectionist and being a high achiever. That's kind of what predisposes you. I liked what you said as well there, and it was kind of grades were a given. It almost feels as though you reached a point where you were like, I know that I'm going to get good grades because that's just who I am. So I need something else that I can now like push myself into being perfect because the kind of grades weren't enough of a, I don't know, more maybe like, I don't know, a good feeling anymore. They weren't good enough. You needed something else.
Yeah, I think so. I think kind of, yeah, the grades weren't kind of like a reward, I suppose, because previously to that, I'd always been working towards getting to medical school. So kind of when I was there, it was a bit like, not really sure what to do now. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is really common. I think we set ourselves goals, and then once we reach them, it's almost like, okay, well, what do I do now? And I think it's quite common to then set another goal and another goal and never quite be satisfied with the goal that has been reached. I guess another question that I wanted to ask you was in regards to when you started at university and you said that you didn't really recognize those behaviors. Do you think that was kind of you moving away from home and starting to have more control over your food, or what do you think sort of developed those rules and that you started to notice?
So in my first year, I was actually in catered accommodation. So I didn't choose that, but that was like the only one that was available. So I don't really know if that was a trigger, but I sort of didn't like the fact that I couldn't choose what I wanted to eat. And even though like when I first went, I didn't really struggle with food, I still found that a bit difficult, really. So I think kind of from that, I just liked to kind of, if I was going to eat something, I wanted to control it. So I think it kind of started small, and then when I was able to have more control, I just took as much as I could, really, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. It's the control that's quite commonly spoken about. And I know that's not something that everybody turns to an eating disorder for, but I know that it is, it can happen quite frequently. I guess what sort of stuff would you advise people if they are listening to the podcast and maybe they're worried about either going into catered accommodation or maybe they don't, they've come from home and now they're going to have to be cooking their own meals. Do you have any advice for people in how to manage that so that things don't kind of get out of hand?
Yeah, so in terms of catered accommodation, I think that was only like one hall out of a lot of them that was catered. The rest of them were self-catered, and they did kind of, I think, I think you could probably have cooked your own food. We did. I think it was like something stupid, like one microwave between 20 people, because they just expected you to eat in
What?
the hall. So, yeah, that wasn't. It was very old accommodation. I think it's been knocked down now, so it's
Okay.
probably for the best. But yeah, if you were in catered accommodation, I think there probably are more options now, and sort of. Maybe if you do find that doesn't work for you at the beginning, you do have the chance to kind of swap accommodations, and you could give any reason that you wanted. And I think there is usually a bit of leeway with that. And then in terms of kind of moving away for the first time and cooking for yourself, probably just kind of having a set of like meals that are kind of go-to meals, so like quick meals, you know, a kind of filling that you like, you enjoy, that are not too time consuming to make, because especially at the beginning it is quite a busy time, and I think there's kind of a temptation to kind of skip meals, or quite a lot of people eat quite all over the place at the beginning because that's just the nature of it. But I think if you have struggled with food, or you're kind of on like the brink of it, I think it's really important to kind of stick to a routine and just kind of focus on your own eating, even if it feels a bit awkward having to have a snack here or make sure you eat something there. I think in the long run, it'll be worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a really good idea of having meals that are kind of quick and easy to prepare, because I know when I first started at uni, like all you want to do is go out and you want to be meeting people. And, you know, sometimes that might involve going out for dinner with them, but often, and you know, not everybody drinks at uni, but for me, I was in a halls that there was quite a lot of partying and stuff like that, and there wasn't time. Like I would have loved to have sat down and had dinner, but there wasn't time. And I think for me, that definitely played into my eating disorder, in that you've not got time, Hannah, because you need to socialize. So yeah, I guess that is kind of a really important thing to think about in terms of meals and stuff. And I know that you said so the eating sort of kind of developed whilst you were at uni. And for me, I was slightly different because I went to uni with an eating disorder, which I sh looking back, I shouldn't have gone. I wasn't ready. And I think I didn't really tell anybody that I had an eating disorder because I wanted to go to uni and I wanted to be this new Hannah. But there's only so much you can do about that because I still had an eating disorder. It didn't matter if I didn't tell anybody. So did you kind of disclose that information with anybody whilst you were at uni, or did you stay quite quiet?
So at the time I lived with like one of my friends from home, so she kind of knew me before uni, so before I'd kind of changed in terms with food, and also kind of the friends that I've made on my course as well. I think a few of them sort of noticed that something was off, but probably didn't know what to say or kind of know what was wrong, because I don't really think I made it that apparent. I did try to keep it quite like secretive, and I think because at uni everyone's so busy all the time, people are on different courses, it is pretty easy to kind of get away with stuff like that. But I did kind of end up telling my friend who I lived with, and she was like, if she was very nice about it, but she was like, if you don't tell your mum what's going on, I'm gonna take you home now and I'll tell her. And I suppose that was kind of what I needed at the time. And then after, I think it was when I decided to kind of suspend my studies. Obviously, I had to kind of tell people that I wasn't going to be there like next week. So I kind of told my close friends, and it felt like I was announcing something massive, but everyone kind of already knew and they'd kind of guessed anyway. So I think kind of when I was in the depths of it, I was quite secretive about it, and it felt kind of like my secret, and I wanted to just keep it for me. But then ever since then, I think I've been quite open about it, and I think that's kind of helped just keep me accountable. But also, just I think when I was unwell, I wanted to find someone else's experience, and I couldn't really find it. So I think speaking about it helps me kind of reflect on it, but also hopefully, if anyone else is in a similar situation, maybe something that they could relate to as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. I think that's the whole reason why I wanted to do this podcast was if someone is struggling, I think having these open conversations and just talking about it completely normally, with no judgment or whatever, it just normalizes what, you know, not normalizes in that it's okay, but normalizes in that, you know, there are other people going through it and you don't have to suffer in silence. Yeah. I wanted to pick up on what you said about leaving uni, because I think often people think I just need to get through this, like I've got to struggle through. But I think not even in terms of you needing to recover, because obviously, like you said before, it's kind of having two different lives, having an eating disorder. And I can imagine trying to do medicine as well at the same time, as, you know, you have to be fully focused on that. But equally, like, uni is such a fantastic experience. To have an eating disorder at the same time, I think, limits you so much, because you can't do a lot of the things that normally you'd want to engage in. But I can imagine that dropping out, especially with those perfectionistic traits, was a really difficult thing to go through. So how did you, like, navigate that? And, you know, I guess, how did you feel at the time when you dropped out, and how do you feel now looking back as to the decision you made?
So at the time, it was literally the last thing I could ever imagine that would have, like, happened with the year. And at the time, I really didn't want to do it. Kind of when it got suggested, I was like, I can't do that. But then sort of as it kind of got closer to exams, and it got closer to kind of the fact that I might have to carry on, because I was just thinking about the 5 years ahead of me. I wasn't just thinking about, like, the 1 year. I was like, I can't carry on, really. But kind of coming up with the decision, as, like, my GP, well, yeah, obviously the GP, the doctor, but she was talking about, like, medical school, saying, like, 1 year taking that out is nothing, so it would benefit me to take the year out. And then also the staff at the medical school were really good as well, so I think that kind of reassured me that even if I did go, my place would still be there and not much would change. So I think that helped the decision at the time. But obviously it was difficult, because I kind of felt like, because I'd got into medical school, I didn't really want it to go, and that was, it kind of felt like I was failing, I suppose. It kind of felt like I was failing at uni by leaving, but also, like, failing the eating disorder as well by wanting to get better. So it was sort of there wasn't really a good option, I suppose, but I couldn't really see a benefit in staying either. But compared to now, like, I'm so glad that I did take the year out, because I really don't know what would have happened if I stayed on, really. So I think, like, the time out helped me to recover, but also just get a bigger perspective on everything. And sort of when I went back, I was able to just fully enjoy everything, as you said, and so much more than just the course. Yeah, so in retrospect, I'm very glad that I did it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's such a difficult choice to make. And I distinctly remember, because I went to Cardiff Uni, and I dropped out after 6 weeks because I just deteriorated so much. And I remember kind of the shame of, I don't want to tell people why I'm leaving. Like, it didn't feel like a valid enough excuse. And then, like you say, leaving uni meant that I was going back home, which meant that my parents would see what I was eating or how I was exercising. It meant that I'd have to start doing therapy. It meant, like, the control of my life had completely gone. So not only was it, I don't want to go home because I'm basically going to be treated like a child again, but equally, like, what am I meant to do? What am I meant to do? Like, you know, I've come here for uni. And I don't know about you, but when I was at school, there was so much pressure to go to uni. It was either go to uni or take a year out and go traveling. And if you're not going to do that, then, well, what's the point? But I didn't feel ready to go to uni at all. And then the year after, I then, you know, felt a lot better. I wouldn't say that I was recovered, but definitely better than what I had been. But like you say, when you're sat there making that decision, it's so difficult, especially when you've got the eating disorder saying, if you go home, that means you're getting better.
Yeah, there was, like, there wasn't really an easy option. But I think, as you say, like, there's so much pressure when you're in school or college. It's like university is the only option. But I kind of feel like everyone should be kind of offered to take a year out before they go, so they kind of have that chance to just explore stuff a bit more.
Yeah.
Because I think what I realised as well is when I took the time out is that before that it had just been constant school, education, just grades,
yeah.
studying for like the whole of your life, and then you stop and it's just, you can finally breathe a bit. And kind of when you do get to uni, so many people are so many different ages as well and have done stuff like that. So I just think kind of the perception that school gives you is a bit skewed, really, that you just have to go straight in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I had a friend on my course and she was 28 and she is now doing medicine. And, you know, she said, I don't care what age I am because I want to be a doctor. So I might be 40 yeah. and I might still be studying, but equally I might be 40 and I might be a doctor. So it's like, you know, there's yeah. so much time, and I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. I wanted to talk to you about your kind of medical degree in terms of, I know you're doing your intercalated year, but one thing that I've picked up on your kind of social media is you're quite keen about getting more sort of knowledge and awareness of eating disorders, mental health into the medical curriculum. So I wondered kind of for people that don't know, kind of what do you learn at the moment and maybe how you want to improve that?
Yeah, sure. So the medical degree is 5 years. And so the uni I go to is Liverpool. So the way we do it is kind of the first 2 years are kind of non-clinical, really. So in the first year, you do like anatomy and physiology. So learn about how the body works. And you do have other kind of modules. So you do something called psychology of medicine and like public health, stuff like that. But it's never focus, it doesn't really focus on stuff like mental health. It's kind of looking at, I suppose, like health behaviors, kind okay. of a wider view, I suppose. And then in second year you do kind of the pathophysiology, so kind of how diseases happen. And in that year you don't really do specialties, so psychiatry is obviously a specialty of which eating disorders and mental health fall under. So I suppose in second year, you kind of expect maybe you wouldn't learn about it. But then in third year, that's when you go on your main kind of, you start your main clinical placements. And so even though psychiatry isn't one of them in that year, I was on like the paediatrics placement, and about half of the patients were eating disorder patients on the ward. And so obviously I kind of knew what an eating disorder was, but so many people didn't. They just didn't know what it was, didn't know how to kind of understand what the patient was going through, and I suppose just saw it from the physiological point of view of like how unwell the patient was. So I think kind of not going through like half of medical school and not ever going through eating disorders just doesn't really feel right. I know Beat were doing some work to kind of put it into the curriculum, so I kind of emailed one of the people in my medical school to just kind of bring it to their attention. And so next year we would do psychiatry as a placement, so you'd be expected to learn about eating disorders, but I think it's literally like one lecture or kind of one like case-based learning which you do, so you answer some questions about it, but I don't think you kind of go into it in that much detail. I haven't done it yet, obviously, so I can't really comment that much. But sort of what she suggested was that obviously the curriculum is so full already, and their kind of target is to prepare you for what you'll need when you first qualify. So when you're just doing general medicine as it is, so she kind of suggested if you wanted to know more about eating disorders, it would have to be sort of an extracurricular thing to offer, and sort of it's more of a specialist subject, really.
Yeah, and I think that's always the sort of kind of outlook I've had about it, is that you have to learn so much. And I guess one thing that we don't ever talk about is, okay, so we sit here and say like there needs to be more education about eating disorders, but then I have never asked the question of, well, how much do you learn about other things, you know, do other topics yeah. get just one lecture, or would they get several lectures? I suppose it's that comparison of where kind of where on the priority list are eating disorders being put? Are they being put at the bottom so they're only getting one lecture, or is it that you only have one lecture on everything?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually. So quite a lot of things you do just get one lecture on, and you obviously you have to go and read about it otherwise. So to be honest, having one lecture on eating disorders obviously isn't ideal, but then being able to go and read about it and maybe seeing it on placement, that is where you do most of your learning on placement, really. So I think, obviously, once I've done it in fourth year, I'd be able to kind of comment more on how much it is covered. But I just kind of think because it does cover so much of medicine, so not just the psychiatry, there's kind of the gastro side, the like women's health side, bone health side, just it can just have so many like impacts. So I just think maybe have kind of like a section at the end of the year with some diseases that just fall into so many categories, just to give people an overview of it, just so they are aware of it. Because I think just going on placement and kind of seeing eating disorder patients for people who had never learned or heard about them before was just quite, I found it quite shocking that that was the case for some people, really.
Yeah, and I suppose, I think the difficulty comes because there are so many stigmas attached with eating disorders. And it's kind of like you were saying earlier about, you know, when your parents were saying there's something wrong and you're like, I'm not unwell enough. Like there's people that are sicker than me. And I think that's kind of the difficult thing, isn't it? Because we do have those stigmas, but equally, like, I can't imagine ever turning around to somebody that maybe has a different disease and saying, no, but they've got it worse than you, like, you know, or whatever, so therefore you don't need the help. But we've somehow latched onto that in eating disorders. But I think I've had this conversation quite a lot, but whenever eating disorders come up in the media, it's always like really, really severe cases. Like an example is Nikki, who passed away really sadly. Whilst that was, you know, it was so important that that was shared in the media, I think also because it's only ever those situations that actually make it to the media, we then have this expectation that everyone with an eating disorder, you know, it's always anorexia, it's always a female, it's always a death sentence. And I think that's kind of the education people are getting, which is just completely wrong. But it's how we even start to break down those stigmas, because I think it's not even just something that's in medicine, it's something that's widespread, and probably people that don't want to listen to it or aren't really bothered about hearing about it because it's never impacted them, they're kind of the ones keeping those stigmas alive.
I think it's difficult because I think unless you've kind of experienced it, I suppose you don't really understand how debilitating it can be, even if it's not that serious. So say like if, like once I'd recovered a bit, I didn't feel as unwell, but it still completely impacted like my life. It still took up like every minute of what I was thinking about. So even though I wouldn't have been classed as being as unwell as I was, it still had a massive impact. And I think a lot of people in like the community and a lot of people awaiting treatment are in that situation. And I think it's really difficult to sort of get that message across to people who, I'm not really sure. I think obviously everyone in the public, it'd be good if everyone could just be more aware sometimes about what they're saying, kind of attitudes that they have towards people. But also kind of, with the way that care's provided, obviously there's a massive strain on services. So I think it's just remembering that there is that kind of group of people who are kind of left in the middle, who kind of feel like they don't have help yet, but they also, I feel like you hear about some people who kind of want to get more unwell to access the help. And I think kind of, I suppose especially like, in the medical profession, you never have that with another disease. You never want to be more unwell if you had something else. You want to get better. So I think that just kind of shows how sort of unique it is and how difficult it is to kind of treat and understand, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of what you were saying about getting support. What sort of support did you have from your uni?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, the uni were really, really good. So I kind of went to them before I went to my GP, just because I'd not like failed anything, but I just felt like I was disconnecting from the course. So I kind of wanted to check in and sort of let them know in case I did, I suppose. And they didn't put like, any pressure on me at all. We just kind of discussed what was going on. So they kind of suggested go to the GP, just kind of let them know what's going on. And there's like a wellbeing team, like specifically for the medical school, which really helped because I was able to see them like weekly. Mm. And I suppose they kind of understood the sort of extra pressure that I might have put on myself. So yeah, that was really good. But I suppose I'm aware of how lucky I suppose I was to have that, because even though I think it's important for medics to be able to access help, there's not really a reason why they should have that in a medical school and not for any other course. So obviously there's still like that kind of support within uni, but I think it's more generalised and not within each subject. Mm. So I think maybe if you could have that person or people to contact, that would help everyone just to, so it's just get that outside opinion that can help sometimes and kind of put things into perspective.
Yeah, I really like that idea actually, because I think if each maybe faculty or something had someone as a wellbeing lead, then they could also be aware of kind of when assignments were coming up or kind of the pressures that are on that course specifically, to then be able to provide that extra layer of support. Because I think when it's a broad wellbeing, you know, individual for the whole uni, like you said, one, the waiting time is going to be absolutely, you know, thousands of students at uni. And unfortunately, uni is a very high pressure time and people do struggle. But equally, I don't think they maybe have an idea of your specific subject. And like you said, I think that was really good that you had it for medicine, because I can imagine that there's a lot of pressure in that. And that kind of leads me on to a question I really wanted to ask you, because I mean, I did biomed, so it wasn't quite medicine, but actually that sounded really rude to myself then, not quite medicine. But when I was struggling, I got a lot of comments kind of like, oh, but you know the science, like, you know the bodily processes, like, why are you doing this to yourself? Which I think completely just like, it's just so ignorant to the fact of what an eating disorder is, because it isn't a choice. Did you find that you had comments like that?
I think looking back, I don't actually think I did. Off the top of my head, I can't really think of anyone that kind of said that. I do remember, so initially I had like private CBT, but then I ended up doing some group therapy via the NHS. And I don't think he meant it like in a negative way, but he was sort of like, you know what you're doing isn't good for you. And sort of, if you were telling it to a patient, you'd be able to tell them like what not to do and sort of advise them. And I think I already knew that, because it's a strange thing that like, you do understand what you're doing, I suppose, and you do understand that it's not good for you, but it doesn't make it any easier to sort of not do it. I've always felt there's sort of a gap between understanding it and being able to like apply it to yourself, I suppose. I think that's like a lot of things, it's sort of a different situation when it's you you're advising. So yeah, I suppose I kind of got that, but not, I didn't find it in a negative way really.
Yeah, but I think it, I don't know, for me it just made me feel a bit more out of control. Like, you know, people would say to me, like, you know exactly the impact it's having on you, you're a really smart girl, like, why are you doing this? And I'm like, hold on, if I could press a button and stop, like, I would. I don't think you realize the sort of like difficulty of navigating this every day and the hold that it has on me. So I wanted to kind of like round us off by, I guess, just giving some tips to people if they are going away to uni and maybe they're thinking, is it the right choice? Yeah. Obviously, you know, it's an individual case for everybody, but do you have any advice to people or maybe things to consider before they kind of go away to uni?
Yeah, so I think probably just be aware that whatever situation you're in, it is going to be quite a difficult time to adjust to. So it is an amazing time. Obviously, you meet so many people and do so many different things, but and you're on the go a lot for like the beginning of it. But I think when you do get that time to yourself and you just sit down, it is quite overwhelming to kind of think, God, I'm here. What do I do now? So I think that's just kind of a natural reaction, but. Obviously, if you've never really felt like that before, I kind of felt out of place like that. That could maybe trigger something if you are struggling with eating or you never have before. I think for me, it was like a load of little things which built up. So maybe just be aware of if you are feeling off, just try and do little things as you go along to kind of check in on yourself. And in like relation to that, make sure that you kind of do have your support system around you. So if you do have friends that you know at uni, or you will make a lot of friends there as well. And also keep in touch with your family at home. And I think probably, I suppose when I kind of went back after having the eating disorder, me and my mum kind of discussed sort of what could potentially go wrong. Well, not what could go wrong, but I suppose like triggers which I could find difficult, or kind of red flags which could signify that I might need a little bit more help again. So I think maybe just making a list of those just so you can kind of recognize them in yourself. Because I think when you are busy or kind of wanting to kind of push it off, it can be easy to ignore it. And I think the thing with eating disorders is you do kind of ignore it until it gets to something that you can't ignore, and then it's just got a grip on you.
I think you've raised a really good point there in that the start of uni in general can be so busy. And I think often we can just fill our time in order to ignore maybe what's going on, which then, like you said, it's sort of like bubbling away for a while. And then all of a sudden it gets to a point where you can't keep pushing yourself to kind of pushing it away and not acknowledging it. So I think absolutely, if you do recognize that maybe something's not going right, just have a little reflection on what's going on. I wanted to ask as well, in regards to obviously, like when you go away to uni, sometimes it can be quite lonely, especially if you've gone quite far away. Like keeping in touch with your family, like you said, is super important. I suppose a question would be more for somebody if they've met somebody and they're concerned that maybe they're sort of developing an eating disorder or not looking after themselves. How do you think that person should navigate that situation? Because it might be that they've not known somebody for very long, but equally, they could be the person that recognizes that something's not quite right.
Yeah, so I think it's obviously a difficult situation to approach, and kind of, I suppose, a difficult conversation to know like where to start and sort of how to start. I think just kind of keeping it really basic, just kind of saying that I've sort of noticed that you're not completely yourself, you like this around food, kind of you've been avoiding this, kind of just not accusing them and not kind of putting a negative spin on it, but just kind of saying it as it is, just the fact. And I suppose just seeing how that person reacts. Because I think a lot of the time, if you are kind of around that, like that around food, you sort of know at the back of your mind that something isn't right, but you just don't really know how to say it yourself. So I think sometimes hearing it from someone else can kind of make you realize sometimes that, yeah, that isn't really what I used to be like around food, or that isn't really what I want to be like around food. So I think kind of don't be scared of saying the wrong thing, and just I think know that you're doing a really like positive thing and really brave thing and reaching out to someone, and that other person will appreciate that as well. But I suppose also if they do react in quite an emotional way or sort of get like angry about it, then that might just be the fact that they don't want to speak about it, they kind of are struggling with it, and that can be the sign of the eating disorder, really just kind of not wanting the help.
I think you've like summarized it really nicely there on both sides. I think, like you said, if you do speak to somebody, they could possibly be waiting for somebody to recognize what's going on, but just need that external person to say something doesn't quite seem right. Because I think often people, when they're in the middle of an eating disorder, they don't want to admit that they're struggling, because that kind of seems like you're failing at the eating disorder, like you said about when you left uni. But equally, I would just want to say, like, you're just because you've recognized it doesn't mean that you're there to fix somebody. And I think, you know, that's always the message I like to put across for parents, carers, loved ones, anybody. Like, the fact that you're being kind of an open space for them to share or to talk to if they need to, that's the best that you can do. Like, don't feel like you're expected just because you've brought it up to fix them, because, you know, people have trained for years and years and years to be able to do that. So I think that was a really nice broad overview that you gave there, Katie. So thank you so much for talking to me today. I've really enjoyed kind of getting your insight, especially I think the insight onto med school as well. I think that was really interesting to have that conversation. I know we've kind of touched on this already, but I ask this question for every episode, so I just want to ask you anyway. So there's two questions. In terms of kind of increasing awareness, obviously the people that are listening to this podcast, like we've said, are probably already kind of engaged and understand eating disorders. How do you think we get the message out there to people that don't already know about eating disorders?
So I think, kind of, as you mentioned, the ideal situation would be to kind of get the message out of every eating disorder at kind of every end of the spectrum. So I think maybe if you just hear something in a conversation, which I feel like I'm quite hypersensitive to something which I think could, like, either trigger an eating disorder or be quite negative around food or body image. So I think it's being able to kind of pick up people on that language sometimes, obviously if you know them, not just a random person, and kind of just explain to them what that could actually suggest, or what that could actually kind of, how that could impact someone who was struggling. Because I think a lot of the time people don't mean to be unaware, they just genuinely don't know. So I think if there are people that you're close to who are speaking like that, maybe just mention it to them. Obviously it's not the easiest thing to do, but I think kind of if you say that to them, they'll remember that, and then perhaps they'll pass it on to someone else as well. Yeah, hopefully. I think the whole kind of like government campaigns and stuff in an ideal world just wouldn't exist, and they would focus on sort of that side of things instead of what they are doing. But yeah, I suppose trying to just put a neutral and positive spin on kind of food and body image and eating, and just kind of push people in that direction as far as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think they're both fantastic ideas, and I agree with you about the government schemes. I think we need to be implementing healthy behaviours that can be sustained rather than things that are, I would say, quite number focused, kind of, you know, that enhances those eating disorder thoughts. And then the other question that I had for you, which you've given loads of tips already, but what would be your top tip or best advice for somebody that kind of thinks that they might need support for their eating disorder?
Yeah, so I'd probably say just the fact that you're kind of thinking that you might need support is a sign that you're ready to get support, and sort of a sign that something's not right. I think don't feel like you need to wait until you feel like you can't cope with it anymore or feel like it's got really serious. I think just if you feel something's not right, just go and speak to your GP, speak to someone in your family, just kind of lay it out how it's affecting you, and just get help as soon as you can, because I think the earlier you can get in there, it can make it easier to kind of manage, and also it just helps to kind of have other people around you, because it can be really isolating if you don't do that. But also it's scary to kind of reach out for that help, but once you do, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Katie. It's been absolutely lovely to talk to you. And I think this is the earliest podcast I've ever done. So I can actually say to people, I can say, enjoy your day rather than have a nice sleep.
Thank you so much for having me on, and also all the amazing work that you do on this podcast. Oh,
thank you, Katie. I love being on.
I think that was a perfectly timed episode with Katie, and to have her input on how she experienced uni and especially dropping out with the perfectionistic nature of an eating disorder, but now she's flourishing, and I think that's really inspirational. Next week, we'll be joined by Jerome Breen, who is the principal investigator on the EDGY study. EDGY is the Eating Disorder Genetic Initiative, and together we explore the research they're doing and how you can get involved.
I guess the other thing is, would genetic and biochemical profiling somehow allow people to escape the BMI trap as well, right? Because BMI is being, even though it isn't supposed to be used to tighter services, the resources are so scant that it is getting used. But if we had a more objective measure of, you know, someone's biochemistry has a problem, as opposed to they can't get down to a low BMI because they have a high bone mineral density.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe to be one of the first to hear it. Please also like, comment, and share this podcast with anyone you feel that may need support at the moment. Not only those struggling with eating disorders, but also their loved ones, as this can be a very difficult time for everyone. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, and this podcast aims to motivate and inspire individuals along their path of recovery. If you are struggling with an eating disorder, charities like Beat, Seed, and First Steps have great resources. Please also reach out to your local GP to see how you can gain support for your eating disorder. See you next time. Bye.